There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with Greg and Colin. Greg, here we are in the middle of winter.
Yep.
It's cold. It's dark in the morning. It's dark in the evening.
Yeah.
I have a cold.
You so do. Yeah.
I don't sound that great.
Yeah.
Hopefully I don't infect you. I don't think I will.
Well, I hope not. Well, we're sitting in a gigantic boardroom, you know, 30 feet apart here. So
yeah. Probably. Yeah, we're not holding hands or anything.
No, no, none of that.
But that's just the way it goes, right? There's colds that go around just in a cycle. And I'm gonna align that with the stock market.
Oh,
of course.
Interesting segue.
Yeah. Well, it also goes in a cycle. And we want to tackle a couple of different things today because there's been lots of volatility.
Yeah.
And in the end of December, the markets were volatile. And I had a client who had been invested for all of 6 days.
Yep.
And he called me up and he was sort of upset because his portfolio was down 0.6%. In 6 days.
Yep.
And, you know, we had a good conversation about, well, maybe you shouldn't be checking your portfolio every day, you know, because there's always going to be volatility.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And this person had inherited some money, a significant amount of money. And I think they've fallen prey to this law of large numbers where, you know, when you're down 0.6% on $10,000, it doesn't feel the same as when you're down 0.6% on, you know, $2 million.
Right? Sure. Yeah. And totally understandable too, you know, and a lot of people, when they look at their bank accounts for the most part don't change. If you don't spend any money, mm-hmm. the amount of money you have today was the same as it was yesterday. But when you're investing, that can be a very different discussion because we know that markets can move pretty dramatically from one day to the next.
Yeah.
And so it can be disconcerting if you think you're looking at a bank account, but you're really looking at an investment portfolio. So, yeah. And so it really requires a mind change. And when we tell people, you know, investing is a long-term process and you probably shouldn't be investing at all unless you have a minimum five plus year time horizon.
Yeah.
Because yeah, nasty things can happen in short periods of time, but historically things have generally worked out over long periods of time.
Yeah.
And so it really is it's a mental shift that people have to make when they are looking at their investment statements and realizing that, okay, it's not going to be a smooth ride, but the longer you can go without looking at it, the smoother it's going to be.
Well, and you can have a smooth ride, but it means that you're just going to have a much lower return over a long period of time than if you have a bumpier ride.
Sure, that's right. And that's always the risk of owning any kind of investable asset outside of a cash or a GIC or yeah. Or in the old days, we used to get things like Alberta savings bonds or Canada mm-hmm. savings bonds. You don't see those anymore so much.
No. I should also call out as well, just because we had some compliance questions about our discussion about investing. These are just our opinions, right?
Absolutely.
We're not giving investment advice on this podcast.
No.
Well, we are, but we aren't. It's not specific to anybody. We're just talking about things in generalities.
Yeah.
If anybody wants to talk about something specific to them, of course they can call us and we'll get into their specific needs. And
in particular, call you.
Call me. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like a realtor there. Call me. nothing against realtors, by the way. I'm just saying.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. But I do not have a bus stop sign or.
I always wondered, do those bus bench advertising things, do they work? Like, do people make decisions to call a realtor based on having seen a name on a bus bench?
I have no idea. No idea. Yeah. All I know is the bus stop near our house, somebody consistently cuts the eyeballs out of the person Ooh. That's on there and kind of converts their face to look kind of like the devil.
That's sad.
Yes.
That's sad. And, you know, maybe it's a top of mind thing because a lot of people, if they go to list their house for sale, they don't really know who to call.
So. You know what, though? I will say, okay, so I know we're going to get into some vehicle questions here, too, just to frame that. But Don't you find, like, when you're looking for something, so if you're looking for a new car and you're thinking about, I don't know, a Jeep Grand Cherokee, for example, all of a sudden you notice there's a ton of Jeep Grand Cherokees. Like, you just see them.
Yes.
So probably when you're looking for a new house, if you're in the market, you probably do pick up on those bus stop signs.
Yeah, that's right. It's just frequency of that message.
Yeah.
You know? So...
I don't know where we're going here. We're totally off script, Greg.
Do we even have a script? Well,
we have a loose script. Let's get back to it.
Okay. All right.
So we've got three questions that we want to talk about specifically to the volatility of markets. And one is, why is the stock market down?
Yep.
Number two is, how often does this actually happen? And number three is, should you be worried this time? And then after that, we're going to talk a little bit about a different cycle, which is leasing versus buying a car.
Yeah, and that popped into my head just because, as my vehicle is now, speaking of Jeep Grand Cherokees.
Yeah.
Oh, can I disclose that I own a Jeep Grand Cherokee?
Well, you're not giving advice.
I'm not advising anyone to buy one, although I've been happy with mine. But it's 7 years old now, and I think 7 years is kind of a sweet spot for trading vehicles. The maintenance is starting to appear, but it's not horrible right now. The mileage is getting up there, but it's not 300,000 kilometers, which makes vehicles very difficult to resell. Mm-hmm. So I'm at the point where I'm starting to consider whether to get a new vehicle. And if I get a new vehicle, will I lease it or will I buy it? So we'll talk about some of the considerations there.
So basically, we're going to take our listeners' time and focus on a problem that you have
Absolutely.
In your own personal
this
life.
It's all about me.
Okay. All right, well, back to the initial part of the segment, which is, why is the market down right now? I should say, when we're recording this, we're actually recording this on a day where the market is having quite an upside. So it's an interesting question. But the short answer is uncertainty. It's not disaster. You know, markets are consistently and constantly repricing the future. And when expectations change about things like interest rates or inflation, economic growth or geopolitics, prices tend to move. And it doesn't mean that companies suddenly stop making money. It means investors are just adjusting what they're willing to pay today for the earnings of a company for tomorrow, right?
It's a good point, because when you think about it, prices can be highly volatile over a period of time when there's absolutely no news about individual companies.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's news about one company that can somehow set off reactions across the whole market.
Yeah, they can move quick. And regardless of what President Trump addressed the United States nation with a few weeks ago, inflation is not over.
Yep.
Inflation is with us forever, right? And that gets priced into the stock market. It gets priced into the bond market. So this is an important distinction we remind people of all the time, and that's, the market is not a report card on the economy today. It's actually a guessing machine about the future. It's looking at future returns, not current returns, right? Mm-hmm. Or I shouldn't say returns. It's looking at future earnings, not current earnings, right? And, you know, sometimes that big guessing machine just has some nervousness around it.
Sure. It's kind of related. I was listening to CNN as I was driving into the office this
morning. Wait, are you recommending CNN to our listeners?
Sure.
Yeah, you can do that.
Absolutely. Unless they would prefer to listen to Fox. I mean, entirely up to them. They have Harry Enten on. And Harry Enten is their analyst who looks at poll numbers and looks at what's happened to attitudes towards certain things, whether it's politicians, whether it's the president, what have you. But he also follows the betting markets. And he was talking today about the probability of snow on Christmas and how around the world, the betting markets are putting a 24% chance of snow in New York City and an 18% chance of snow in Chicago, things like that.
Yeah.
And it just brings to mind how the stock market, while it is absolutely not something that we bet on, but it's how it's a reflection of all of the market participants' attitude towards the future and expectations. And expectations change from time to time as news comes in about one aspect of the economy. Whether it's inflation, whether it's jobs data, then the expectations change, as you say, and that's what moves the markets.
For sure.
Yep.
Okay, so the next part of that is, well, how often do markets go down? And I think this is where perspective can really help, just like the example at the beginning when this person said, my portfolio is down significantly. I said to him, it's been 6 days.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, market declines feel rare when they happen, but statistically, they're incredibly common, right?
Yep.
So history has shown us, and I shared this with this person that was concerned, that, you know, 9 out of 10 years, there's a 10% correction at some point during the year.
Yeah.
That's 90% of the years for those that are keeping track.
And 2025, we experienced that back in April on Liberation Day.
Yeah.
Where I think the market was down close to about 20% at that point from its peak.
Yeah. So north of a 20 or south of, I guess, of a 20, pardon me, a 10% correction. So when you get into that 10 to 15% range,
yep.
Well, that kind of happens every couple of years.
For sure.
Right? And then a 20% correction, or a bear market as it's called, can happen sort of every 5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
So I guess statistically, if we had a bear market in April of 2025, the likelihood of a bear market in 2026 would be less, yep. But it's not for sure. Right?
No. And if you look back, I mean, let's just look back at the last 10 years or so. I mean, we had a bear market in 2022,
yeah.
You know, when inflation really spiked. We had one for a very brief time in 2020 with COVID. The market was down about 35%.
Everybody discounts that one.
Because it lasted such a short period of time.
Yeah.
Hey, but 35% is 35%. Yeah. Anybody looking at their portfolio would be pretty shocked. And we had a 20%er back in 2018 that nobody even remembers. Because it was over, also recovered very quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, so since 2018, there's been three.
Sure. So that's
four, if you count April of this year.
So that's actually even more than the historical statistical evidence would point to. But
for sure,
we had Mark Eibel from Russell Investments on our show a few weeks ago. And Mark is a really great speaker. And he talked about how the stock market is typically up 72% of the time.
Yep.
Which means that 28% of the time it's down.
Sure.
So how often do markets go down? Well, regularly,
yep.
Right? So it's not that the, you know, will they go down? It's what do you do when they go down? And should you be worried when they go down?
Yeah.
And, you know, this is usually where the emotion kicks in, because every downturn, it feels different. It feels scary. It feels uncertain. You know, we always hear this, well, it's different this time. Well, maybe the headline's different, but really the cyclicality of that market is not different than it has been in the past, right?
Yeah.
So the real risk isn't market volatility. It's what are people doing during it? So if you're selling when markets fall, or you're sitting in cash and waiting for things to be more clear, trying to get back in when things feel safe again. I mean, the problem is markets typically recover before things feel safe. And so we remind clients of three things around that. And do you want to take this part, Greg?
Sure. Well, the first thing is your plan, which you've worked out with your advisor or planner, already assumes bad markets. So when portfolios are built, they're not built for perfect conditions. They're built knowing that markets are going to go down, and sometimes sharply. And so that's why we talk about time horizons.
Yeah,
because when you're looking at a long-term plan, time horizons can matter. And money that you're going to need in the next 3 years, whether it's to buy a home or to make an investment of some kind, we generally don't want to have invested in the markets where they can be extremely volatile and the funds may not be there when you need them. You have to know that that's built into the plan already and it's accounted for. And so you can withstand those periods.
Yep.
Secondly, time matters more than timing. If you miss down days, you know, you might pat yourself on the back, but missing just a handful of strong recovery days can permanently reduce returns. And we've talked in the past about how much an average return on the TSX or the S&P 500 can be affected by missing just a few of the really great days, because the market performance can be extremely lumpy. You get periods of, you know, or days of extremely strong growth, and then a long periods where not a whole lot is happening. And so the third thing is doing nothing is often the most disciplined decision, because sometimes the smartest move is not making a move at all.
Yeah.
And if you have constructed the portfolio with advice, the way most people do, with good diversification, then you can ride out those periods of volatility, because as you say, the 28% of the time when the market's going down is more than made up for in the 72% of the time that they're going up.
It all comes back down to that question about market timing, and it's a tempting and dangerous question, a tempting and dangerous thing to try to do. Market timing sounds logical, but it really isn't, because it requires two correct decisions, when to get out and when to get back in. And the history that we know of shows that most people just get both wrong, right?
Yeah. And this is something that, you know, when we talk about behavioral biases, it affects professionals as well as individual investors. I mean, over the last year that I have not been an investment advisor.
Not giving investment advice.
Correct.
Yes. You hear that compliance, right? Okay.
Right. Yep. Yeah, there's many times when I start to second guess myself, say, oh, things look pretty rough here. And oh, whether it's Liberation Day back in April or what have you. And when things went really bad, and it's really tempting to say, ah, I should have known that when they announced all these tariffs, markets would tank.
Yes,
they did. But then, of course, they recovered almost as quickly. Mm-hmm. And so it's tempting, because that's, you know, that's what your mind does. Your mind plays those games.
Yeah.
And so it can affect everybody. And that's why the discipline is so important.
Yeah. We tend to tell clients boring things like stay invested.
Yeah.
Right. Stay, as Mark Eibel said, stay in the game.
Stay in the game. Yep.
The market rewards patience, not prediction. And the goal isn't to avoid every downturn. It's to accept that there are downturns. And it's also to participate in every recovery.
Yeah.
Right. So that's super important. So now we're going to change gears and hijack the rest of the show and help you decide whether or not you should lease or buy that new vehicle, Greg.
And while it seems unrelated, you know, the decision highlights some of the same behavioral patterns that you see in investing. Mm-hmm. Okay. And it may not seem obvious up front, but what happens is you're making predictions about the future. And the predictions can be based on things like, well, what kind of car are you buying? Are you buying it? Because one of the biggest cost in owning a car is depreciation. Mm-hmm. You know, what you pay for a car today and what it's worth 4 years from now or 7 years from now or down the road, because cars are depreciating assets. When we talk about owning certain assets, whether it's real estate, your personal residence, whether it's vacation property or stocks or bonds, stocks in particular, those are what we consider appreciating assets. We expect that their value to go up over time. Whereas with something like a vehicle, we don't. We expect and know that its value will go down over time. And so the decision of whether to lease it or own it can be based on, well, what is your expectation to a certain extent of what the value of the car is going to be worth down the road? Mm-hmm. But let's just talk a little bit about what is leasing.
Well, actually, before you do that, I want to get into that investment piece, because anytime I've been at a car dealership, they say, oh, this is a very good investment.
Yeah.
And I say, well, this is not an investment, because the minute I drive it off the lot, it's going to go down in value.
That's right.
You're right.
It's an asset, but it's not an investment asset.
Yeah. Yeah. And let alone by the time my kids drive it and get it into an accident, then it's even worse.
Yes, right? Exactly. So what is leasing? I mean, I guess that's the big question. Buying a car, most people kind of understand the concept. If you're buying a car for $50,000, you can buy it in one of two ways. You can, if you have the money in the bank, you can just write a check for $50,000 and you own the car outright on day one, or you can finance it, meaning going to a bank or a loan provider and borrowing the money, borrowing the $50,000 and paying it off over time. And you'll pay interest at whatever the prevailing interest rates are at that time. You theoretically own the car, but you have a debt obligation until the loan is entirely paid off.
Yep.
So with leasing, just for example purposes, let's say you take a 3-year lease on a car, you're paying an interest rate of 4%, same as in both cases, let's say, just for example. But after 3 years, basically you give the car back.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you've really bought is you've bought the depreciation. You've paid for how much the car has lost value, and then the car gets turned back in and you own nothing at the end. But the payments tend to be a lot lower than they would be in the case of a financing. So buying a car, the pros of buying a car outright, you own the car long term. The costs are typically lower over time, particularly if you keep the car for longer periods of time, let's say 5 or 7 years. Mm-hmm. There's no mileage restrictions, which there often are on leased vehicles. And there's more flexibility because, again, you own the car. Some of the cons of buying a car outright is you have a much higher upfront cost. You have the risk of depreciation, which is certainly a factor in all vehicles. And early on, you have less predictable expenses. Okay, so most cars come with a warranty that cover most major things for the first few years. But after the warranty wears off, then you're responsible for all maintenance and all repairs on that car.
Well, and one of those cons on that would be the extended warranty that everybody wants to sell you.
Yes.
I always debate that one.
Yeah.
Is it worth it? That's maybe another subject.
Sure.
But yeah.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about that one day. Whereas leasing a car, the pros are you have predictable payments, you know, lower payments overall and lower upfront cash. And with the concept of leasing a car for 3 or 4 years, you're always driving a newer vehicle. Back in the day, as they say, which would be for me, maybe 25, 30 years ago, I would always lease my vehicles because I didn't want to face the costs of, you know, of maintenance and repair that come up as vehicles age. And so when you lease a car, you may end up spending more, but you're always driving a relatively new car.
So you're just buying peace of mind.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And protecting against the risk of some sort of catastrophic repair that you might have to face, whether it's a new transmission or something like that. Or in the new cars, which is one of the reasons why they want you to buy the extended warranty, it's the computer technology. Mm-hmm. They say, oof, yeah, I'd get that extended warranty because if this computer goes, that's a $10,000 hit.
Yeah.
And then I say to them, well, I thought I was buying a car that would hold up pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe wouldn't face those kind of catastrophic repair requirements. So anyway, with the leasing a car, the cons, the reasons why you might not want to do it is you do have a slightly higher long-term cost, possibly. At the end of the lease term, you don't own anything. And there's no asset at the end, even a depreciating one, unless you choose to buy out the vehicle at its depreciated value. And there's just less flexibility. For instance, there are requirements that you sign on to when you sign the lease with regards to how many miles you're going to put on the car each year, that kind of thing.
Well, it's like it's that whole renting versus owning a condo or a home.
That's right.
It's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're renting a condo, you're not going to upgrade the kitchen.
Yeah, that's right.
Because at the end of your lease, you don't get to take it with you, right?
And it kind of ticked me off one year when I was about to return a leased vehicle. They send somebody over to assess the, let's say assess.
Okay. I don't know, I like assess.
Assess. And then somebody over to assess the condition of the vehicle because you're returning the vehicle back to the dealership that you leave from. And they're looking at little scratches and thinking, oh, you got some scratches here. Oh, there might be some repairs necessary. And I would say to them, it is a four-year-old car.
Yeah.
Most four-year-old cars aren't in mint condition. And so that is an issue.
Yeah.
So in the end, leasing or buying, neither one is right or wrong. The big question is, does a decision align with your cash flow, lifestyle, and long-term plans? So you don't, you know, you can't time the car prices. You know, we went through a period I was unlucky enough to need to replace a couple of vehicles back during the COVID era when supply chains were all bottlenecked and there was 8 vehicles on the lot and you had to order and wait for 4 months for something. And that was not a great time to be buying cars. You don't get a lot of negotiating power when there's no vehicles on the lot to buy.
Well, and during that time, you could buy a nice 2015 Honda Civic for $50,000.
Exactly.
Because there is no inventory.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, just like investing, I mean, you can't time when to buy a car. Sometimes you're forced into a decision to buy it. And the better approach is just to understand the trade-offs, make a decision that aligns with your plan and with your goals for how you like to operate vehicles and that kind of thing. But let's take a quick look at some of the numbers, you know, because people will say, well, should I lease or should I buy or should I finance or should I just pay outright? Mm-hmm. And the answer is it will likely cost you more to lease than to buy. The decision to whether to lease or finance or just buy a car outright very often comes down to the prevailing interest rates at the time.
Yeah.
So back when we were doing this podcast in 2001, 2000, and mainly 2000, 2001, when interest rates were essentially zero, the cost of borrowing would have been maybe 1.5% to 2%. At that point, leasing or financing would both make a lot of sense as opposed to buying the car outright.
Yeah.
Because you could take that money that you would use to buy the car outright and invest in things that hopefully would do better than a 2% return. But if let's just do a little bit of math here. Let's say our assumptions are we're going to buy a vehicle priced at $50,000. The cost of money is about 4% annually. And we'll talk about a three-year term. And the residual value, which is, well, how much has the car depreciated in the time that you've driven it? Let's say about 50% of the manufacturer's list price. Pretty typical.
Yep.
What that means is if you lease the vehicle, you're paying the lease payments for 3 years. And at the end of the term, you can turn the car in and you don't get any money necessarily. You don't own anything, but you've spent that money to rent the car is essentially what you're doing. The value is $25,000. If you choose to buy out the car at the $25,000, you can. But at that point, you might as well have just bought the car in the first place.
Yeah.
So let's look at the cost. If you buy a car or finance it, and it's 4% is the prevailing interest rate, your monthly payment would be $1,476. And the total cost over 3 years would be $53,136. So you're paying about $3,136 in interest over that three-year term. If you lease the vehicle for 3 years, your lease payment is $819 a month for 3 years, and your total cost of that is $29,500. Mm-hmm. And so comparing, if you buy a car, finance it over after 3 years, you spend $53,136, you own the vehicle, which is worth $25,000. If you lease it, you've spent $29,500 and you own nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the return the car. So the true cost of owning, if you deduct the car worth $25,000 when you bought it, we said you paid $53,000 or so to buy the car. It's worth $25,000. So the true cost of buying is $28,136. The total cost of leasing is $29,500. So over a three-year term, it's costing you about $1,400 more. Mm-hmm. Now, for many people, that might be a good trade-off. Well, for $1,400 over 3 years, I can lease this car, turn it back in, and I'll have a brand new car, do the same thing 3 years later, release. For other people, it's like, well, I'm not going to get rid of the car after 3 years. I'm going to drive it for 7 years, like in my case with my Jeep. And so the actual costs are much lower
mm-hmm.
because I'm not turning myself back into a point where I'm leasing and spending another $29,000. Or more, because the price of cars will go up over time. So once again, it's more costly to lease than to buy, but you have peace of mind of owning a vehicle that probably won't have a lot of repair issues, and you'll be replacing your vehicle quite regularly.
So tell the audience, what are you going to do?
What I'm going to do is going to depend entirely on what interest rates are at the time that I'm going to buy a new car.
Yeah.
You know, if interest rates are high, regardless of the leasing versus buying decisions, in the end, I'll probably choose not to finance it or lease it. I'll probably buy it outright and then just hope that it lasts 7 years, the 10 years. If costs are very low, I might well decide to finance or lease. And leasing has a lot of, as I say, for me, a lot of attractiveness because I don't like getting into very expensive repairs, which tends to come up as the car gets older. So.
Good.
So again, it's a very individual decision aligned hopefully with what your goals are and what your lifestyle preferences are.
Well, and it's totally relatable to the markets because it's all about expected return.
Yep.
Right. So your decision to lease or buy is based off of what interest rates are at the time and
yep.
what they're expected to be in the future. And
yep.
the stock market's no different, right? It's all about expected return.
Exactly right.
So I had to bring it back there because
I appreciate that because otherwise people say, like, what are we talking about? Leasing and buying and financing and what's that got to do with investing?
Yeah, well, it does. It's just a different cycle.
Well, it's how you spend your money. You know, how you spend money on a depreciating asset as opposed to a appreciating asset.
Yeah. So. It's kind of like my neighbor. He put up a fence around his yard to keep dogs off his grass.
Oh, yeah.
And he was struggling putting it in. And I really don't like this fence, but that's his problem, not mine,
yeah.
right? And he said to me, you'd never believe how much this fence cost me. And I said to him, after looking him dead in the eyes, yeah, people spend their money on all kinds of things,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Like, so whether it's a new car or a fence around your yard or a vacation or...
Sure, home improvements.
Yeah, just don't do that kitchen reno on the condo that you rent.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Doesn't make sense.
Nope.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've killed that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are we good?
We're good.
You're aligned with, or you're happy with your decision?
With my non-decision at this point, absolutely.
Okay. Yep. Well, good.
All right. Till next time then.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals, and they have not been approved by, and are not necessarily those of, Q Wealth as a firm. This is not legal, accounting, tax, or investment advice, and should not be relied as such.